My name is Brett Statham, and welcome back to the Particle Photon Weather Station video series. This is the sixth and final video. It's part six of six, Receiving Events with C-Sharp. You can grab a copy of the slides and code that you need to follow along with the videos in this series at aka.ms/PPWS. That's short for Particle Photon Weather Station. And in the first video, we gave you this big picture overview of the architecture that we're building through this series of videos. And at this point, we've created just about everything. We've got an Azure Service Bus namespace with an event hub. We provisioned a photon with a DHT11 temperature and humidity sensor. It's publishing data up through a particle webhook into our Azure event hub. We then turned around and consumed that event hub data with Stream Analytics and Power BI. And then lastly, with a node client. In this video, we're going to consume Event Hub messages using a .NET client application. The demo that I go through here is based on the tutorial code that's just right out of the documentation. You can use the URL on the screen there to learn more about that. And that walks you through creating both a sender and a receiver using some different NuGet packages. I'm going to move forward here with just creating a receiver because our particle photon is what's sending the messages up into our Event Hub for us. We just want to be able to receive them with our .NET application. But if you want to know more, go take a look at this tutorial. Something else that may be confusing is that the .NET application has a requirement of an Azure storage account, whereas the Node.js application didn't. And the reason why is that the Node.js client application and the Azure Event Hub's library that we used in that didn't have any built-in support for checkpointing. And that's where basically as the client is consuming messages out of an Event Hub, it might want to somewhere record what messages it's already processed. And that way, if the client has to resume or restart, it doesn't have to go back and reprocess all the messages that it's already dealt with. And so a checkpoint mechanism gives that client application just somewhere that it can log that. And if you wanted to do that in the Node app, you could certainly do that. You would just have to go implement it yourself, and you'd have to choose somewhere to store the checkpoint data. And an Azure storage account would be a great place to do that, because that way the Node client could run on distributed nodes around the world and still be able to check into the central place to find out what messages have already been processed. Well, the .NET application that we're going to use leverages the Event Processor Host class from Microsoft. And that class is really just a wrapper around some lower-level Event Hub APIs that make it easier for you to use Event Hubs. And part of what it provides is a built-in checkpointing functionality that leverages an Azure storage account to store the checkpoint data. So if you want to use Event Processor Host, you have to have an Azure storage account for it to store its checkpoint data in. If you don't want to checkpoint your data that way, that's perfectly fine. Just don't use Event Processor Host. Go use the lower level APIs yourself directly to consume your Event Hub messages. Now, the .NET client application that we'll be demoing here is available in the GitHub repository for this video series at aka.ms/PPWS. And inside the code/net client folder, you can find the Visual Studio solution for this .NET application. And if you actually open that up inside Visual Studio and look inside the solution, you'll see some files. Key ones here are the message.cs, and that's a code file that stores the structure that our Event Hub messages are going to be deserialized into. We've got a simple event processor class, which is going to be used by that event processor host for each partition. It's going to spin one of these guys up and use it to open that partition, process messages in it, and close that partition down when it's done. And then finally, we have the program class file, which is really the main console application. It's where it sets up the connection string to our event hub, gets the event processor host set up, and tells it to get started processing messages. So inside that message.cs class, this is just a snippet of what you see in there, but these are nice strongly typed properties that map up to the actual JSON values coming out of our photon. If you recall, our photon is sending up things like sensor names and units of measure and actual sensor values and a bunch of other metadata. And so that goes up through the particle webhook into the Azure Event Hub and then down to our .NET client application. And then we deserialize that and get it stuck into this nice strongly typed message class so we can easily access it from .NET. Pretty cool. The other code file in there, or one of the other code files, is this simple event processor class file. And this is used by the event processor host. The event processor host is going to look at our event hub and find how many partitions there are in it. And for each partition, it's going to spin up an instance of one of these simple event processors. So the simple event processor is going to be responsible for checkpointing the messages it's processed. So we're going to have a little stopwatch timer that we'll use to issue periodic checkpoints. The processor needs to know how to open the partition. And so when it does that, it's going to go use the partition ID to connect up to it and get a lease on that partition, as well as start up the checkpoint stopwatch so it can periodically issue checkpoints for the messages it's processed. And when told to do so, the processor needs to also be able to close down its connection to the partition. And the important part there is releasing the lease, and that makes it available for other client applications to be able to come in and connect to that partition and process messages out of it. And then lastly, it'll just issue a final checkpoint. However, the main work that the processor does is process events. And so when told to do so by the event processor host, it's going to go get a collection of messages out of that partition and start looping through them to process them with this for each loop. And so inside the try block here, I can see that it's basically going to take the data of a message, change it into a string, and then try to deserialize that string into one of those message class instances. And as long as everything works, I now have my message data, and I can do something with it. In our case, we're just console right-lining it out to the console there, so it's a little anticlimactic. But this is where you've got your message data. This is where you go do something with it, right? Maybe do something a little more interesting than just dump it to the command prompt. However, if there was a problem deserializing the message, then we're going to catch the exception. We'll just log the message out to the console. Finally, periodically, once every 5 minutes, we're going to have this processor go checkpoint the messages that it's received. So it'll just go record information about what's the last message information that it's already processed. So when it starts back up, it doesn't have to go process all the outstanding messages in the event hub. It can just start up with the last message that it checkpointed. Okay, and then finally is our program class. And so the program class is really just the wrapper around this that makes it all run. At the beginning, we set up the information that it's going to use to tell that event processor host how to connect to our event hub. So we need our event hub connection string, and that's going to include the service bus namespace name, as well as the SAS policy and SAS key that are needed to connect up to it. And then the event hub name variable is going to have the actual name of the event hub. We're also going to want our .NET application to consume messages from its own consumer group. So right now I see that the consumer group name variable is being set to just the default group name, but we're going to want to go in and change that to have it use the one that we set up for our .NET client. The event processor host, as I mentioned, also has a requirement to access an Azure storage account for its checkpoint data. And so I'm going to have to give it the name of an Azure storage account as well as a key that it can use to connect up to that storage account. And then it'll use that information to build a connection string to that storage account. And then we're ready to spin up our event processor host. And we start out getting a unique name for it. Every event processor host has to have a unique name, so we just generate a GUID for that. And then we tell the event processor host to go create itself using that event processor host name, the event hub name, the consumer group we want it to read, the connection string for the event hub, and the connection string for the storage account. One last thing before we tell it to process messages on partitions. We're going to tell it that we want it to start processing only current messages and not to go back in time. Now, we're already checkpointing, so you could decide whether or not this is necessary or not. But on that first run, it's going to want to go back all the way to the oldest message in the event hub and process from the beginning. And so here I'm saying, you know what? Don't mess with it. Just start at the most current messages with the current UTC now date timestamp. If you do want to process older messages, think about changing that initial offset provider definition or just not providing one at all. But then finally, we tell event processor host to start registering event processors for the different partitions. And that's where we tell it to use that simple event processor class to do that. And then it gets kicked off. Each simple event processor for each the partitions opens them up, gets leases to the partitions, and starts processing messages on them. And then we just sit there and wait for the user to exit by pressing a key. When they do, we go tell all our processors to close down. They close up, checkpoint, and the program exits. All right, so a big, long discussion, a little more convoluted code-wise than some of the earlier samples, but it's really pretty much the same thing. We're just seeing some different syntax and some different ways of structuring that code. But with that, let's jump in and go take a look at it. First, as a reminder, you can get the source code for this video series at aka.ms/ppws. And inside there is the slides and code and everything you need. You can just download the zip file. Now, I've already done that and extracted it out here to this ppws directory. And underneath there, inside the code folder, is my .NET client folder. And so right inside there's the solution file that I want to open up. So let me go open that up inside Visual Studio. And over in my Solution Explorer, we kind of talked through these different files here, but if I open up message.cs, zoom in a little bit there, you'll notice that this is really just a way for me to store the values that are coming back out of the JSON messages that are received from my Event Hub. All right. Then I've got my simple event processor. We talked through this, and this is where it's basically closing up connections or opening connections to our partitions and then processing the events that come back from them. And again, this right here was that magic. This is where we actually get the Event Hub message, deserialize it into one of those message instances, and then do something with it. In this case, we're just doing console.writeline, but you could do something far more interesting at this point. Any exceptions are caught, and then we just log those out to the console. And then finally, inside the program class, I need to come in and set up this connection information so our event processor host has all the details that it needs. So the first thing is this event hub connection string. So to get that, I'm going to jump back over to my Azure Management Portal. I can drill into my Service Bus namespace, and in Event Hubs, if I drill into my Event Hub, under the Configure tab, you might recall earlier when we set up the Event Hub, we had provisioned a net client shared access policy for the .NET application to use, and that gave it both send and listen permissions. Although we're only going to be listening, but you could send as well. And if I come down here, I can get the actual key value for it as well. But to get the connection string, I have an easier way to do that. I can just go back a level, and inside the Event Hub, just say connection information. And then pick that net client, and here is the connection string that I want. So I'm just going to copy that to the clipboard, and now I can go back to Visual Studio and replace that placeholder there with the entire connection string. And so notice it's got my Service Bus namespace name, and then it's also got the shared access policy name and the shared access policy key in there as well. So that's great. Then we also need the Event Hub name in there. And again, I'll just come back over here and drill in and copy that out. You could type it. I'll copy it. And the consumer group name is defaulting to just this default group name, which is $default. I want to go change that, though. Again, we had inside our Event Hub provisioned a net client consumer group name. So I'm going to come back over here and replace that with that literal net client. Cool. You'll notice these red squiggles. I should just go ahead and do a build to get rid of that. And that's going to restore all the NuGet packages. And in fact, if I come up here, I can see that there's this Microsoft.ServiceBus.Messaging.EventProcessorHost that is needed to make all this stuff work here. So I'm just going to come up and we'll do a build, rebuild the solution, and that's going to restore all the NuGet packages and make sure everything compiles up here for me. And that'll get rid of all these red squiggles. Cool. So stuff looks happier now that that succeeded. But continuing on here, I need to tell the event processor host about the storage account name and the storage account key. So back over here, earlier we had gone in and created a storage account for our Stream Analytics to use. And I'm just going to use that same storage account. That's perfectly fine. So here's the name. And then if I drill into it, I can copy that name. And we'll paste that in as the storage account name. And then I also need the storage account key. So I'm going to come down to Manage Access Keys, and I can copy the primary access key for the storage account. And again, paste that in here. Bingo. And now it uses those two values to create the storage connection string that's needed. And that's pretty much it. At this point, we're going to go in and new up our event processor host. Sorry, there we go. Using all those details that we just set up. And then registering a simple event processor for each of the partitions on that. Actually, the one other thing, we talked through this earlier, but notice here's where that offset is. So we only start receiving messages after now. But that's it. Let me go ahead and save this all up and do one more build, make sure everything compiled successfully. All right, looks good. So I'm going to go ahead and start this. And as each simple event processor starts, it's going to report back some information here for me on the partitions that it's using. And I'm starting to receive temperature values. There we go. Pretty awesome. So again, you've seen this in the other client application samples here, but let's go ahead and pin this over here to the left and pull the camera up. And again, we should verify that we're getting messages about once every 6 seconds here. So let's see. There's one. Yep, so about every 6 seconds we're getting a message in, right? Remember, our photon is sending every 6 seconds. So let's check this out. I got my temp at 68, my humidity at 32%. So I'm just going to hold my hand over the sensor here and see if we can get it to warm up and verify that we're getting those modified values coming out of the .NET application. Actually, yeah. It's a little late. It's kind of cold where I am. And my hand is kind of cold too. So, oh, but there it goes. 69 degrees. So it is changing. Let's see if the humidity changed at all. No, sticking right at 32. All right. Well, I didn't make significant impact, but it did change. All right. And there we go. So it's working. Ah, there goes the humidity bumping up. Awesome. Well, so at this point now, then we've got our .NET client application. You saw it's actually pretty easy to do to get in and start consuming messages out of your Event Hub. So we'll close this up. Well, that wraps up this video series. I hope you made it all the way through and that you found some value in it. We started out up in Azure, created an Azure Service Bus namespace, and inside there, our Azure Event Hub. We showed you how to get set up for the Particle Cloud, how to claim a photon, and then how to get your sensor connected up to the photon and pushing data up through a Particle Cloud webhook into your Azure Event Hubs. Then we looked at a number of different ways to consume those messages. We started out using Stream Analytics and pushing that data off into a Power BI dataset. We came back and looked at using Node.js to create a Node client application. And then finally, in this video, looked at using .NET to create a .NET client application. And with that, hopefully you're inspired and have some great ideas on how you can start to leverage Azure Event Hubs and the Azure platform at large to be able to create your IoT solutions.